claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very pleased to have a guest today that I shall introduce momentarily with thoughts about how we can deal with the problems confronting society. However, I would like to take a few minutes to report on a couple of developing stories, including what the world is becoming aware of, namely that St. Fauci has turned out to be a fraud now, being generally recognized. We've been reporting it here forever, where, of course, he was predicting a surprise pandemic back in 2017, which revealed he was complicit. He was the guy supposed to prepare us, but he didn't do it. Now his ambiguity, his reversals on face masks not being appropriate, then face masks being appropriate, but perhaps more importantly, when Rand Paul called him out in Congress about whether or not we are talking about an engineered virus or not, the increasing evidence it was engineered is leading to a great deal of criticism. Amazon has canceled, is not going to carry a forthcoming book by Fauci where he was going to share with us his words of wisdom. I think this man, whom, as I've reported many times, will be responsible for more deaths, more mass murder than any other figure in history, even if you were to combine all of our foreign adversaries, Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Emperor Hirohito combined. Fauci deserves to be indicted, prosecuted, convicted, and then the most severe punishment appropriate applied. Meanwhile, we know that Pennsylvania has sent a delegation to Arizona. They're reviewing how the audit is being conducted there. It looks very much as though Pennsylvania is going to adopt a similar model. The Democrats, of course, are continuing now to pack the Supreme Court as a decision that may affect Roe v. Wade is coming under consideration by the court. It's a thinly veiled form of blackmail, completely inappropriate. But then what else do the Democrats have left? I personally believe Roe v. Wade was one of the most thoughtful, well-crafted decisions in the history of the Supreme Court by dividing pregnancy into trimesters, where during the first trimester, abortion can occur under any circumstance. During the second, that the state can regulate how it's done. But after the during the third, after what's known as viability has taken place, meaning the ability of the fetus to exist outside of the intrauterine environment, which turns out to be a function not of heart or brain activity, but lung development, where up until that point, the developing entity really doesn't have the status of a separate being. Where the crucial question turns out to be not whether, you know, we have a form of life from conception. Obviously, we have a form of human life from conception. The question is whether it has a status of personhood, whether it's entitled to be regarded as a person in the eyes of the law, which is a social, political, and legal concept, where the court decided, in essence, that personhood begins with viability at the end of the second trimester, and during the third, any abortion other than to save the life or the health of the mother qualifies as murder. And yet you have Democrat zealots such as the governor of Virginia talking about infanticide, about completing an abortion after a child were born live. That's obviously reprehensible. The Democrats, like the Zionists, have overplayed their hand here. And I don't actually expect Roe v. Wade to be reversed because it's such a powerful precedent. What's most important, I think, is the following consideration. If abortion were abandoned, then women would be required to carry to term an unwanted fetus. We know from sociological and epidemiological studies that unwanted children tend to be emotionally affected. They tend to become juvenile delinquents, career criminals, much to the detriment of society. The pro-choice position does not require anyone to have an abortion, which means every mother can act in accordance with her own conscience, her own circumstances, her own family. The pro-choice position is obviously an American democratic alternative as compared to what the pro-lifers would impose upon us. I respect everyone's right to decide for themselves. Every woman should have that right, but where no conclusion should be imposed upon them either way. Meanwhile, right here in Wisconsin, where I reside, the GOP has introduced bills banning critical race theory in kindergarten through 12 schools and on the University of Wisconsin campuses. The bill would ban 8 concepts from the classroom, including that one race or sex is superior to another, that a person is inherently racist by virtue of his or her race or sex, that a person's moral character is necessarily determined by race or sex, that a person should feel guilty for past acts committed by people of his or her race or sex, and that systems based on meritocracy are racist or sexist or designed to oppress people of another race. When you articulate them clearly, it's obvious these are ridiculous propositions. Every one appears to be clearly, provably false, that this is a political, ideological movement intended to impose, and that critical race theory has no business in the classrooms, not only of Wisconsin, but of any other state of the union. Remember, all the laws we have banning discrimination, which were originated because of discrimination against blacks, apply equally well to discrimination against whites. You can no more discriminate against whites upon their race or their sex than you can discriminate against blacks. These moves are all clearly unconstitutional. I have no doubt they'll eventually be found to be so. But in the meanwhile, you have all the damage that's done between the time that an action or a policy is adopted and the time it's ultimately found to be unconstitutional. Let me conclude with one further observation. The guy who claims to be president, who's obviously a puppet, whose election was totally illegitimate, where the massive evidence that this was a stolen election is completely overwhelming for those who bother to look, where the hypocrisy of the Democrats who spent 4 years telling us that the Trump 2016 victory was illegitimate, that he wasn't really our president, and the resistance for 4 years nonstop 24/7 now, of course, has adopted the attitude that anyone that questions the election of 2020 of Joe Biden, which was preposterous by any measure or yardstick, where you had a guy who had run for president three different times over 35 years, never won a single caucus or a single primary, suddenly beginning with South Carolina, beginning a string of victories that were the outcome of manipulation, one form or another, running with a vice president who was the first to drop out of the Democrat race, didn't even make it to Iowa, that they were absurd candidates to put on a slate, and where, just to illustrate, in Arizona, when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made a joint appearance just weeks before the election, the local media were embarrassed to have to report nobody showed up, nobody. They claim, of course, Arizona was carried by Biden by a 10,000-vote victory, but it appears to be the case that, in fact, Trump swept Arizona by over 1 million votes, which no doubt is why Pennsylvania legislators are so keen on determining what is how they're conducting their audit, contemplating it as a model for them to adopt and follow in Pennsylvania. Meanwhile, this guy, this phony, illegitimate president, is declaring that the greatest threat to the nation is white supremacy. White supremacy. You would think that all those riots, all that looting, all that arson that occurred last summer over and over again, Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, elsewhere, was by the White Lives Matter movement. This is absurd beyond belief. We have Black Lives Matter committing all these atrocities, and would you believe now, just as I come on the show, I get a new report. Violent Minneapolis Black Lives Matter mob, Luke, Sneaker Shop, Target, Walgreens, CVS, and more. They're making looting their practice, their area of specialization. And Biden and Harris are right there rooting them on and using the completely contrived events at the Capitol on the 6th of January, where we have every reason to believe John Sullivan, the well-known Antifa leader, dressed in Trump gear, brought 226 Antifa members into the Capitol to disrupt, not the counting of the electoral votes, as they would have you believe, discussion of election fraud, than which Donald Trump wanted nothing more. We know this was planned in advance. Even the New York Times has acknowledged Trump was speaking at the Ellipse, mile and a half away. These events all began before he had completed speaking. And would you believe the Capitol Police welcomed everyone in? You can see video where there are managers and directors in the crowd, where the Capitol is protected by massive magnetic locks on the door. They could not have intruded without permission and cooperation and compliance by the Capitol Police, who, guess what, are under the control of none other than the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. With all that as background, reviewing some of the problems we face today, riddled with irony and all kinds of hazards, I'm very pleased to introduce Bob Patterson, like myself, a former Marine who has been giving a lot of talks as an activist about how we can cope with the problems confronting society. Bob, welcome to the Raw Deal.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. We definitely have some problems in this country, don't we?
Bob, yes. If you could increase your volume a tad, that might be good. I want to make sure everyone can hear every word.
Okay, I'm giving a shot here. Is that better?
That's better. Yeah. Bob, how'd you get drawn into all this activism about how to deal with issues at local and county and state level and so forth? I'm fascinated to hear.
Well, there's it actually takes on a long term deal. I'm 73 years old, so I've kind of watched a lot for a long time, and I spent too much time watching, not enough time participating in our country. And I decided one day that through talking about it, it's time to do something about it. And so I started, I got involved in with a group that was trying to divide the state in half here in California. And I realized, being a Marine, we do not leave half of our people behind. We, instead of running from the problem, we got to look at it and create a solution. And but we got to identify the problem. And we identified the problem, and it comes down to poor legislative government here in California. And so we started I started a little agenda called Repair California, in which I went out and found an individual to run for governor of California against Gavin Newsom. And hopefully we'll be successful with that. I studied a lot of people, but I took time. And I also helped with a local football team. And I spent a lot of time encouraging these people on the team to look at George Washington's army and understand the privileges that we have today that we call rights. They're not rights, they're privileges. And then I told them to study World War II and study the people that, that gave us and secured those privileges. A lot of them gave their lives for these privileges. And so I got involved that way. And now I'm kind of ramped up to where we're working on issues in California. We said, if we can fix California, we have a 1 in 50 chance of saving the United States, but we've got to start in our backyard. And with the high school guys,
Go ahead. No, I would just say, if you can fix California, you can probably fix the nation. I think California is in the worst shape politically, ideologically, economically, and otherwise of all the states. And of course, California all by itself has something like the world's seventh largest economy. So it represents really vastly more of the interests of the United States than merely its standing as one among 50 states. California is preeminent among all the states. So I'm very impressed with your efforts, Bob. Give us a little background about this separate California business into a Northern and a Southern California, if you might.
Well, that was a group of people legitimately thought that might be a way to solve the problem and break the Democratic control of California. And the problem is, I've got a lot of Republican friends and Democratic friends here in California. And when I sit down and ask them, just name three things that, that you really want out of your state, or four things, whatever it is, they're almost parallel identical. They'll tell you education for their children, health care, good jobs, and secure borders. And it doesn't matter which party, but all of a sudden, we're being represented by people that have an agenda of their own. It's not an agenda of the people. And so this particular group is called Jefferson. I joined it. I studied it a little bit. Basically, as a Marine, I infiltrated and learned what I could learn about it, and realized it wasn't about bettering the lives of the people. It was more about controlling more of the lives of the people. So I left there, and I got involved with another group that peeled off of there called New California. And it sounded good, but then it became more of a money laundering, in my opinion. I'm accusing anybody of money laundering, but it was more about chasing the dollar. And I told him in one meeting, I said, it sounds like I might as well be sitting at a bar. Everybody's talking, nobody's doing anything. And so I left there and basically started a campaign to repair California. If you have a vehicle and you get a flat tire, you don't cut the car in half, you repair it. And California is used to be about the seventh largest economy in the world. Right now, we're probably a long ways from that. Because we've been regulated to death. We've been completely shut down in so many ways. There's vehicles not allowed in California that are allowed in 49 other states. So we have to do something as a people. And when I was coaching high school football, I'd tell the guys, go to a board meeting. Go to a school board meeting. It's about you. It's your future. I have a history. I don't have a future. I'm 73 years old. So it's about your future. Go and study it. and then go to the county board of supervisors meeting, go to your city council meetings, and get involved. Get involved locally. If you can fix something locally, the people running the state will hear you, no matter what state you're in. And you can actually put together programs, letters to the legislators, and they have to listen, because you have the power of the vote to destroy them or enhance them. It's our choice. But you have to get active. You have to understand what you're talking about and understand, you know, what laws need to be modified, because some of them, we've got people making laws at every level, from federal all the way down to the city council, that have no experience in the laws they're talking. They regulate our vehicles. They regulate our schools. They regulate our police. They regulate our firemen. It's out of control. And we the people, need to speak up and take control of our lives. We are the government.
Very good. Very good, Bob. Now, begin in the beginning with what you believe can be done at the local level, for example, to advance the cause of restoring legitimacy to our government.
Well, at the local level, for example, the city councils, you can go in and we can talk about regulations. Here in California, it costs us probably close to $40,000 to get a permit to build a 2,000 square foot home, an 1,800 square foot home. And the people that, when we go to get here in the county that I live in, Placer County here in California, when I go to get a permit, I take engineered drawings in that are stamped by a civil engineer and a structural engineer, both. And then they send it out to another engineering firm that I end up paying for, and then to critique the engineers. It's all about siphoning money from the people. And then we have a person who has never even been a contractor, for the most part, come out and inspect the project. And it's ridiculous. It's a comedy of errors is what it is. And they'd say, well, it's for the betterment of the people. But it's not. It's about a financial gain is all it is. Just yesterday, I was at a repair shop to get some parts for a water truck. And I was looking at a control board that goes in the cab of a truck that had 30 switches in it. And I said, my gosh, you have to go through flight school to learn how to operate this vehicle. And the gentleman with the shop told me, he says, well, we have a contract to build water trucks for the state of Idaho. And he said, this is required by government. He said, that same truck, Bob, I would build for you for the control unit would only have 4 switches instead of 30. But he said, because it's government, this truck, this control unit, costs $140,000. For me to build you one for your private industry would be $40,000. So it's things like that that we have to become aware of. We have to talk to our local agencies and tell them, why do you have to overbuild everything when it's okay for us as a private citizen to use a piece of machinery or a school or whatever? Why is it that when it becomes government, it costs so much more and it comes under the title of prevailing wage, which is a pilfering of the people's tax dollars?
Yes, yes, yes. And what kind of response are you getting to your suggestions? How much interaction with members of local communities? And then we'll turn to the state level.
It's amazing. The amount of response I've been getting. I'll bet you in the last 3 months, I've had probably 200 people ask me, why don't I run for governor? And my response is I'm a pretty good herdsman. We need somebody out front that has more knowledge than I. I'm smart enough to know that I don't have enough knowledge to be a governor, to lead the people, but I can go and find out things. I can help feed the governor information. But we need a more rounded person. The people, the response that we're getting to rebuild California, repair it, is amazing. And it's coming from both sides of the aisle. It's not a Republican or a Democrat thing. And I've I've stood in front of several people and told them that when I served in Vietnam for 13 months, never once did I ever look to my left or right and ask, are you Republican or Democrat? We were United States Marines on a mission, and our job was to complete the mission. And as you know yourself. And so now I tell legislators that the day you take an oath of office, you should no longer be a Republican or a Democrat. You should be a congressman or a senator or a city council member or a county board supervisor. Whatever position you take in government, it should be for the people, not for the party. And there's not one district in the entire United States that's all Republican or all Democrat. And right now, our legislators from the city to the county to the state to the federal levels represent the party more than they represent the people that they voted them into office.
Well, that's extremely interesting. What more can you encourage local citizens, residents of their towns to do, Bob? I think it's, you know, good for them, for example, to get involved in school board activities, in city council activities, write letters to the editor, all that. Please pick up wherever you like.
Well, I really feel it's important that people educate themselves to what the government is doing to us and take off the blinders. I don't care what party you're in or if you're not in a party at all, but look at it in real terms and evaluate it. Real terms, understand, educate yourself, and communicate with people. Communication is one of the greatest treasures that we have, and we lose the First Amendment to communicate, we're in trouble. But we got to communicate. We have to. That's how we learn to understand what's going on, because we talk to other people that have what we're having, and we can create the resolve for it. But you have to have identify a problem, and then you have to have a realistic solution that will help. And in that,
Bob, we're up against a break. We'll be right back with Bob Patterson after this break. Thanks for being with us.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where my special guest today, Bob Patterson from California, has been active in encouraging solutions at the local, county, and state level to the problems we confront in society, which are so massive. Bob, please do continue and tell us, what success are you having? What solutions are you recommending at the county and state level?
Well, at the county level, we're working on a lot of the day-to-day stuff, meaning like permits. We're working on communicating. Getting a line of communication is our first big hurdle so that we can be heard, and we have to be heard in numbers. So we put together ways that we can basically take a department and audit it to the best of our ability, because sometimes we don't get their cooperation. And then we go and go to the heads of these departments, and we figure out a way that we can streamline it and make it more palatable for the tax dollar instead of just spending. Let's do something with it. I've sat down with a gentleman that was not sure if he wanted to run for governor in California or not, but I studied several people with that said earlier. And he and I had a four-hour talk. We'd never met before. And he came to my office. We sat down. We talked for 4 hours. A week later, he came back and he goes, "Well, I don't know how you did it, but you talked me into running for governor." Because I told him it wasn't about Bob Patterson. It wasn't about the gentleman's name is Doug Ossie. And he says, "It wasn't about Doug Ossie. This is about the citizens of this state. And we, being the elders of the state, owe it to our people to share our knowledge and help educate the young people." And so anyway, Doug has come on board, is running as a candidate for California. The reason I picked him is a developer. He was in Congress for 6 years, in U.S. Congress. And he said the reason he didn't want to run, the biggest reason, was the fact that he doesn't believe in career politics.
The reason he didn't want to run again, Bob, was exactly what?
So that was appealing to me. And the fact that he knows in government, you know, what hallways to walk down, which ones to leave alone for right now. We've got to pick our battles. We cannot, at the state level, we can't go in and say, "We're going to fix everything." There's 300 or 400 departments in the state of California. And our goal is to take four departments and go after them and educate the people inside the department and teach them how to run it as a business, not as a government agency that has no end to money. We're several trillion dollars in debt, as everybody knows. And in the 60s, we had a surplus of money in the whole United States. So something went terribly wrong between the last 50 years. And so we're not going to fix it in a couple of weeks, but we got to start. And if we don't start, we'll never fix it. And so it's important that we work at every level in your local, state, and federal. But you got to start at the bottom and build a foundation and go up from there. And that's like, for example, we're going to try to audit as many departments as we can. For example, we'll go back to that water truck deal where they're spending an extra $100,000 for controls for that, but we're not paying police, firemen, and school teachers a decent wage for what they do. And can you imagine this country without police, firemen, or school teachers? We'd have a devastating society, and we'd be in big trouble. But
well, Bob, you know, the Democrats have been running on a campaign of defunding the police. They seem to think we can get along just fine without them. This is a lunatic approach. I cannot believe anyone would support them. And I'm sorry to say it reinforces the absurdity of anyone who believes that Joe Biden got more votes for president than any other candidate in American history. It's absurd on its face.
Well, I've actually talked to Democratic friends of mine. Not all of them agreed with me, but a lot of them agreed that they think that the election was rigged and they're embarrassed by it, as they should be, as I would be, as I am, as a citizen of the United States, that we've let our system get to this point. But I tell a lot of the young people, we have the greatest system on earth to live in. Because it's a great system, it's done by mostly honor and your word. Your word is your bond in life. It's the most abused system in society, in any country in the world. And I mean, if we went to North Korea, for example, we used our system the way we abuse it here, you'd be executed immediately. So, I mean, it's a deal where we've got to get people back on board that aren't about power and money. It's about the strength of a nation. It's about the betterment of the children of this nation, which we've lost a couple of generations, in my opinion. We have to go back not only educate the children, we have to educate their parents, and in some cases their grandparents here, their younger grandparents, because it's a kind of a free-for-all in a way. And if we go back and look at, for example, Detroit, Michigan, about 20 years ago, when the regulations got so bad that all the businesses and companies left Detroit, and I've got a very good friend of mine that lives in Detroit. He was teaching school at the University of Michigan, business law class, and he and I have been friends now for roughly 20 years. And he's a hardcore Democrat, and I'm a Republican, but we get along great. We want the same things. We spend a lot of time on the phone talking to one another about avenues to go. And I use Detroit as a kind of a mentor for me, because when I look and see what's happening in California, the empty buildings and stuff like that, in the major cities, the homelessness, I saw it all there 20 years ago. And we're following the same footprint. We've got to learn from the mistakes that were made there and correct them. And the mistakes are being made throughout the United States. It's not isolated to Detroit or California. It's everywhere. And a big part of what I'm talking to legislators here in California about is I'm trying to put together for example, we're going to take homeless. And the homeless situation here in California is devastating. These people, when they were little, they had dreams of being a doctor, a lawyer, a fireman, or whatever. And now they're homeless. And so we got to figure out, okay, how did they get there? Well, we've overregulated, we've overtaxed. We've just driven some people completely out of their minds. They just can't handle it. And so now we have to build some places that we can, basically like hospitals, that we can bring them into, rehab centers. And we got to, first of all, test them for drugs, make sure drug free, and test their ability skills. And the biggest part of it is that I found through high school football was I have to build their esteem. Their self-esteem is the most important tool that they have, and most of them don't have it anymore. So you build that self-esteem, they become productive again, and we teach them a trade, we put them back into society. And these are things that once we put together all this in writing, and we send it out for signatures, ask general pop. And if we can pick up anywhere from 500,000 to 1,000,000 signatures, we take it to the legislative body and says, here's a problem and here's a solution. Let's work on it together. And they may tell us, here's why we can't do it that way. And it might be legit. But we have to at least approach it. We have to look at it. We have to come up with something. And maybe they'll modify it a little bit. Maybe they'll take it just the way it is. But at least we're doing something. Our voices are being heard. And it's not my voice. It's the voice of many, many people. And that's kind of a direction that we took here in California to keep it from becoming a state that resembles Detroit, Michigan 20 years ago. And Michigan's a beautiful state. It's got I love it back there. I mean, it great people and everything, but it's not fair to them. Life isn't fair. You have to take control. And that's where we're at. We're at the point where we're going to take control, and we the people are going to resolve the problems of this country. Our legislators aren't going to get it done. In fact, George Patton said once, no good decision's ever been made from a swivel chair. It's made by the people that are out living the deal. So I have to agree with him. And our legislators at every level, I tell people out here that they're short on ears and long on mouth. They don't listen very much, so we have to go in numbers and make sure that their hearing gets repaired.
Bob, I'm just so concerned about California. I was born myself in Pasadena. I graduated from South Pasadena High School. It was wonderful in my day, which was the 40s and the 50s, really a marvelous place. With the mountains and the desert and the ocean. California seems today a very, very different place. And I'm just interested in your reflections over what has happened to transform California during your lifetime.
Well, during my lifetime, I'm with you. I'm 48, and in Sacramento, California. I spent most of my life here in California and rodeoed professionally. Prior to the Marine Corps, I rode bulls professionally for 21 years across the United States and Canada. And it was, I got to see a great nation. I got to spend a lot of my time meeting people in other states, working on ranches in other states, stuff with the people as I would tour the rodeo circuit. And, but anyway, I feel got to live in the best of times, and it was just luck of the draw of being born at that time. California was a booming state up through the 60s and mid-60s. It started going downhill, and we started getting overregulated. We had a part-time government up to 1961 or 62, somewhere in there, part-time legislators. And when it became full-time legislators, everything went sideways. And because there's so much wealth in California as far as ability to make wealth, the weather is great, opportunities are great, there's a lot of industry that is here. It was, you could say, well, I don't mind paying a few more dollars in taxes. But we pay 82 cents a gallon in fuel tax, and our roads are terrible. They're probably some of the worst roads in the United States. We pay 28% business tax. Income tax, and if you go to Nevada, they pay zero business tax. And it's funny because when I leave California and I'm driving on Interstate 80 toward Reno, Nevada, when I cross over the state line, they don't have to have a sign there. The road gets smooth. It's I'm not telling anything that people that haven't driven it don't know, that it's pretty simple. California, we've allowed people that aren't interested in California's well-being. They're interested in their own well-being. We've allowed them to become our leaders of the state. And we, the people, kept saying, well, that'll never happen, or that'll never happen. But by pay attention and become active. And being active means to educate yourself to what's going on. Go on the internet. I'm not an internet born child or anything like that, but it's really interesting that I can go on the internet and find out some of the new laws that are they're trying to pass that we don't read about. We don't hear about them on the news. The news is very, very skewed. They're not reporting facts. They report a direction. They're paid. They're money chasers too. And like I tell young people at work, I tell them, money is numbers on paper. It's a tool. Just like a hammer or a saw is, it's a tool. It only functions if you put it in the right place and operate it the right way. And we're out of control right now. We're just completely it's only a few. I mean, there's a lot of good legislators, but there's a few on both sides of the aisle that are destroying America.
Yeah, I'm very keen to get your assessment of the Biden administration, what's going on in Washington, D.C. I think a lot of us are simply appalled by the situation in America today, that we have a nation that is virtually unrecognizable to us.
I agree. I'm embarrassed to tell anybody from a foreign country that I'm an American. And I should not be. My nationality is Scotch, Irish, English, and Spanish. And I've never served in any of those countries. I've never paid taxes in any of those countries. My allegiance is to the United States of America. I've served in the Marine Corps here in the United States. I pay my taxes here in the United States. I'm proud of our country. I'm proud of our Olympic teams. I'm proud of our the people here and what they accomplish. And just when I pick up a paper or turn on the TV and listen to the news, and I see where somebody, a private citizen, stepped up to help somebody that was in harm's way. I'm proud of these people. I'm proud of this country. But I'm also disappointed in the Biden administration. I cannot believe, and here again, I never thought this would ever happen in our country, but I cannot believe that he's basically destroying everything. And I tell everybody, I'm in the building business. We build a lot of steel structures and stuff, buildings, high rises, and not so much high rises anymore, but a lot of buildings. And I tell everybody, remember two dates, January 20th and February 1st. January 20th, and a major event happened in the United States, and Joe Biden took office. February 1st, which is just 10 days away, the price of steel has been going up. And to this date, from February 1st to now, we've gone up over 65%. Concrete has gone up over 80%. The lumber has gone up over 100%. Groceries has gone up at least 15%. Gasoline has gone up $1 a gallon. And everything goes up except our national security. It's gone down. Now, why would we allow that to happen in this country? And foreign countries are taking advantage of us now, and I don't blame them. I mean, if I was a foreign country and I had an opportunity to squeeze a lot of money out of the United States, do it. But I'm not a foreign country. I'm in the United States of America. And so I don't blame the foreign countries. I blame our lack of leadership. And when Donald Trump was in office, a lot of people didn't like his personality, but we're not married to him. We don't go home with him at night. He graciously donated his income to us. And he took a job, and he made us a stronger and better nation. Like him or dislike him, yeah, look at the facts. And when you look at the facts, I cannot believe. In fact, I truly believe that California, he won California by 70%, and it still stayed blue. Corruption. And that's why we have to get involved. We have to clean this corruption up. We cannot allow the government to allow the corruption, be the caretakers of it and clean it up. We, the people, need to reclaim our title as government. And so that's kind of where I'm at and what I've been doing for the past several years, and I'm getting more and more active in it. And it's more and more rewarding because I'm starting to see more and more people from both sides out. Which, again, this is not a Republican or Democratic thing. This is just the way it is. In fact, I'm going to repeat something that Ronald Reagan said one time. He said, there isn't a right or left. There's only an up and a down. And he's right. And we're going up. We're building this nation bigger and stronger and better than ever. And the down is we're taking it down. And it's in 1970, when I came home from Vietnam, a friend of my uncle's, he's driving tractor for my uncle, was a tunnel buck. And he'd worked most of his life all around the world in mines. And he told me, he says, what were you doing in Vietnam? And I said, I was fighting for human rights. And he goes, nah, he says, you're fighting for animal rights. But we went on with the discussion there for a little bit. And then he said, during my lifetime, not his, I would see Russia fall without a shot being fired, the United States fall without a shot being fired. And I thought, Lou, you're wrong. You know, I'm a proud Marine. I just came home from a battle, and I'm not buying that. Passed away. Russia had fallen without a shot being fired. And today, when I look at the regulations, this is my 50th year in the building company that I bought. I look at the regulations years ago, and I look at them today, and we've fallen, and we don't even know it. We've lost so many of our privileges and opportunities throughout the nation at every level. The county has taken more of our abilities away. The state has taken them more away. The federal government has taken more of them away. And so we've got to fight to come back. And it was explained to me that an East Indian guy said one time, he said, my grandfather rode a camel. My father rode a camel. I drive a BMW and my son will drive a Land Rover. But his son will ride a camel. Because if things are hard, people have value to them. They earn stuff. And if they're simple, there's no value to it. And you just race through life. And you miss a lot of life. And I have to agree with that. If you're given something, you don't have the value to it. But when you earn something, it's there. And I look at our forefathers, I look at the people in World War I, in World War II, George Washington's army, and they earned the privileges that we enjoy. And in the last 50 years, we didn't have to really earn these privileges. We had a couple generations of people that benefited from them. And we've got to put a value and find a way to impress upon these people that are getting things for nothing that there is a value to this. And the only way I know how to do it is to go out and get your hands dirty and work and earn.
And Bob, we're coming up against the break. I want to give out the numbers so callers can call in to discuss these issues and others. 540-352-4452 to speak with Bob Patterson and me about any of these issues. Bob, for some time, I've been contending that we need to take at least four measures to regain control of our government and the future of our nation. The first is jettisoning electronic voting machines. I mean, especially in 2020, we've seen how they can be used to steal elections. We should return to paper ballots and hand counts. They're not only cheaper and more reliable, but they encourage community participation and a sense of dedication to the common good. Second, to get rid of gerrymandered voting districts, that we need to adopt the Iowa model, where a panel of retired judges define these districts so we don't have them artificially contrived to guarantee that an incumbent will be elected again and again and again. In the third place, let's get private money out of public, out of federal elections. I believe they should all be covered by the taxpayer to reduce the influence of private companies on the government once it's in place due to the debts that are thereby acquired. And fourth, and initially it seems counterintuitive, I advocate restoring the draft. I think that while Richard Nixon, you know, abolished it in order to take the wind out of the anti-war movement, that he thereby really separated concern by ordinary American families with decisions of war and peace being made in Washington and by the White House, because they knew their sons and daughters were not going to be at risk. So that now I think there's been a tremendous detachment. It's also the case, of course, that these young people don't have any military experience. They don't acquire a certain sense of discipline and responsibility. They don't acquire the skills that would enable them for adapting a trade, pursuing a trade when they get out of the military. And all those grounds, I believe abolishing the draft was catastrophic. I think today yep. we're up against the heritage, because so many young people today are so careless, have no regard for government. They have no sense of responsibility. And while you would not have the chance to address these issues prior to the break, since we're heading there momentarily, Bob, I'm very eager to get your thoughts about all four of these proposals when we return. Let me reiterate for callers, Mitchell standing by, the number 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Please contemplate joining us at your earliest opportunity. Speak with Bob and me about all these issues. Bob, I'm just delighted to have you here. You're doing a lot of good work on behalf of California. We'll be right back.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either," available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. The the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and freedomslips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host, where I have my special guest, Bob Patterson, talking about what can be done to improve our situation within the country. And I've asked him to assess four proposals I've made about eliminating electronic voting machines, about doing objective drawing of congressional districts, about getting private money out of federal elections, and restoring the draft. Before we go there, after which I'll bring in our caller standing by, I want to report a brand new article here that further reflects on the absurdity of declaring that white supremacy is the major domestic threat to the United States, when, you know, anyone who looks at crime statistics know that 50 times more blacks kill blacks than whites killed blacks, 50 times more. 10 times more do whites kill whites, or do blacks kill whites, than is the case of whites kill whites, or blacks kill whites, than are the case of whites killing blacks. That's the minimal occurrence statistically when you do an analysis racially. I reiterate, 50 times more blacks kill blacks than do whites kill blacks. Now, here we get a report from King County in Washington, the home to Seattle. It's 71% white. Get this. Almost all firearm violence in 2020 is committed by non-whites. Imagine living in Seattle, Washington. You're a citizen of King County, renamed to honor Martin Luther King Jr. in 1986 because William Rufus Devane King, for whom it was originally named, was a slave owner. It's a 71% white county. The 2020 King County Firearm Violence Report, published by the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office Crime Strategies Unit, was released. It matter-of-factly states, 76% of shooting victims are non-white, 55.19% black. 80% of those charged were non-white, 53.85% black. King County is roughly 6% black. Whites, who represent the vast majority of citizens of Seattle and King County are a peaceful, docile people. Gun crime in Seattle and King County has a color, and racially speaking, it ain't white. I'm just incensed by the way in which the Democrats are racializing politics here in the United States and promulgating ridiculously false claims. And for this guy, who's a fake president of the United States, to be declaring that the greatest problem facing the nation is white supremacy is just obnoxious, repulsive, totally unfounded and false, and it's a disgrace this man should be occupying that office and making such outrageous claims. Now, Bob, before I bring in Paul, I want you to have the opportunity to talk about those four proposals I've been making for some time. First of all, getting rid of electronic voting machines. Your thoughts?
I'm with you totally on getting rid of electronic voting machines. Anything that's controlled by a computer can be manipulated to fit whatever, you know, it'll only put out what you put in. And I really believe in the fact that we need to go back to identification. You have to have an ID card or a driver's license in order to vote and go to a polling place and do that. I don't see any other way to do it fair. And at any point in time where the people that are auditing the votes being taken have to leave or ordered to leave, the vote counting should stop right there until they can resume the next day or whatever. But no, I'm totally against the Dominion machines and anything like them because it's corrupt.
And how do you feel about, you know, adopting the Iowa model for redrawing congressional districts so they're not gerrymandered in such a way as to guarantee that the same representative is elected year after year after year?
If any state in the country needs that, California does. We are so manipulated out here. And unless we can redistrict, we can't. Control the people do get in year after year after year after year. And for example, the Bay Area, the San Francisco Bay Area, dictates a lot of what everybody else has to live like in Northern California. And quite obviously, a person in Cedarville, California, which is clear up in the far northeast corner of California, who has a cattle ranch, he has different needs from the legislative body than the person that lives in San Francisco that doesn't even own a car. So we can't have the cities dictating the country's life. So we do need to redistrict and kind of get that balance of power.
And of course, private money corporations make such a difference here. I'd like to have your opinion of whether you believe private money should be taken out of federal elections, which ought to be financed by the taxpayer.
Exactly. And I've said this for a long time that we probably should put a cap on how much money anybody could spend on a campaign. And then they have to figure out how to communicate with the people and not be bought and sold. I think that lobbyists should be completely removed from every level of government. I think private money going into anything like this is destroying our system. Our system's not designed, or was not designed, to be bought and paid for other than we, the people's votes. Our votes are supposed to be the most powerful tool out there. But when we raise, 70 million votes and big money can buy 80 million votes, jokingly, I tell people, I finally learned this last year that a vote does count. And in some cases, it counted 8 or 10 times.
Yes.
So we gotta fix that, you know? So yeah, I think keep private money out of it. Keep the lobbyists out of government. They are about themselves, not about we the people. And government is we the people.
Tell me what you think about my most controversial proposition to restore the draft. Of course, as a former Marine yourself, you may have a greater degree of enthusiasm than many others might, but I really believe that the long-term integrity of the nation requires that all of our young people should have a military experience and acquire thereby the discipline and sense of responsibility that goes with it, because we have, as I see it, a generation of young people who've never been responsible for anything. They're utterly careless, concerned or preoccupied only with themselves, and have no sense of the good of the community or the nation.
Well, it's kind of a delicate thing. I totally understand where you're coming from there, and I agree with probably 90% of it. And I don't, that 10% don't disagree. I'm just going to embellish it a little bit. I agree that the best thing that happened to me was I joined the Marine Corps, and I'm still a Marine. I'm very proud to say I will always be a Marine, and the people around me know that very clearly. They well, like my dad said one time, he says, told my mother, he says, if you ever need to know the truth about something, ask Bob. You may not like what you hear, but it'll be right. And the people around me know that, and that's a pride that, you know, yourself as being a Marine, that's a pride that we don't embellish things. We tell it like it is. And here's what we do to deal with it. Now, as far as the draft goes, I think there should be three options there. I think there should be option number one, you can go in the military for 2 years, right out of high school before you're ever allowed to go to college or whatever. Or option number two, you can go to work on a farm and learn how to grow crops, learn how to work with Mother Nature, work with the earth and water and everything. Or number three, you work on a cow ranch at a dairy or something like that and learn how to understand livestock, understand life. One of those three options would fit just about everybody on earth if they took a 2-year tour of one of those and then went on to college and figured out what they wanted to do from there. The problem with drafting everybody, people, when I came home from Vietnam, people would ask me, they said, what do you think about the people that went to Canada? And I said, God bless them. Because I don't want them to have my back in a combat situation. Every one of us Marines that went to Vietnam, we volunteered to join the Marine Corps. We did it of own free will for love of country. And I don't want somebody there that would turn and run and cost me my life and cost me the lives of some of my friends. So that's a delicate.
No, I agree with your refinement. I actually was contemplating like 80% military, 20% civilian service option. I like your refinement about farming and so forth. That's very, very good, Bob. And, of course, I respect the right of conscientious objectors. My own brother was opposed to the war in Vietnam and declared himself to be a conscientious objector. And I, wrote a letter of support endorsing his integrity, which may have been the only letter the draft board ever received from a Marine Corps captain on active duty in support of a conscientious objector, where by a divided vote, I think of 3-2, he was granted conscientious objector status. He would have, or so he declared, fled to Canada today. I don't know that Canada is such a hospitable situation, because there's a calamity going on there in the name of coronavirus, or cracking down on freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. They're dragging pastors out of churches and arresting them. It's outrageous. Let's broaden the conversation by bringing in a caller who is also from California, Bob. Paul, join the conversation.
Well, good Friday morning to both of you. You know, so many things I wanted to hit. I actually took notes, Jim, of all the things that I wanted to attack, but I'm going to try not to do that. But I do want to hit a lot of points. But I am curious of what you just mentioned about your brother. Is he one of your family members that took the vaccine?
Oh, no, I don't believe he has, but I don't know for a fact. He suffered a stroke several years ago. He lives in the Cape in Massachusetts, and I've been, you know, trying to reach him. I'd be very surprised. He's not in a position, I would think, where it would be of any potential benefit whatsoever. In fact, as you well know, I think Sherry Tenpenny has it right when she describes these mRNA vaccines as perfectly designed killing machines.
Okay, you know, that's a separate subject. I just was curious when you were talking about it. I wasn't exactly sure. I know you have, several siblings, not just one or two.
Right? Yeah, I have five brothers and a sister. Oddly enough, I have brothers and sisters who are not related to one another. I have one full brother, Phil, of whom I was speaking, but my parents divorced and both remarried. So I have a half-brother by my mother and stepfather, and then three half-brothers and a half-sister by my father and stepmother. So I'm in an odd, but in many ways, typically California family-type situation.
Right, right, good. Okay, so first and foremost, so Bob, you sound like, you know, a really thoughtful, you know, intelligent guy. You know, I'm sure if we were in the same neighborhood, hanging out at the same coffee shop, we would be in many discussions, and I bet you they would be enjoyable for both of us. I had to laugh when you said something about you didn't think you were intelligent enough to be the governor, or you were smart enough to know that you weren't smart enough to be the governor. I mean, you got to be joking, right? What they do here, and like they do so many places, but especially California, is they give us celebrity. You go all the way back to Reagan, okay? These people are essentially groomed and placed into office. There's a great video that I highly encourage you to find. I don't know if it's still on YouTube, but it's called California's Ruling Families. And it was about 25 minutes, if I recall correctly. And it goes over the interconnectedness of these families that have been ruling California for generations, the Browns, the Pelosi's, the Feinsteins, and the other one escapes my name, right, but it's related to Gavin. I mean, as you know, Gavin Newsom is related to J. Paul Getty. And if you think that Gavin Newsom is intelligent enough to be governor, well, I don't know. Are you ready for Caitlyn Jenner? I mean, they're already grooming us to accept this fact. And I'm predicting that it may well happen because, well, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is a conservative, don't you know? So that's where we're going. In fact, Caitlyn Jenner is so conservative, he decided to conserve his package. So you were going to say something.
Well, I tend to agree with a lot of what you're saying. And first and foremost, I think we'd be great neighbors, and we'd probably have some good conversations. Going back to being smart enough, I'm smart enough to know that I don't have I'm very direct. When it comes to dealing with legislators, I would probably walk into the assembly or the state senate and say, "You guys are a bunch of maggots. You're fighting off the people of this state, and you're not doing
there. You go.
You're just like a maggot." And I don't think I'd get a lot of support from there on in for the rest of my term with the legislative body, but they would know where they stand, and that's the reason Go ahead.
I was going to say you'd have a lot of support from the people. I can guarantee you that. Quickly, the four things that Jim touched upon right before he took callers about the voting machines and private money out of elections. And so all those things are great ideas, of course. But to me, I liken these things to, you know, we're heading off a cliff and we're talking about, well, we got to make sure we redo the brakes on this car. You know, we're on a ship and, you know, we're heading towards the rocks and, you know, hey, we got to make sure that we have a really good rudder on our ship. It's, yeah, it's too late for all that in my.
Go ahead, Paul. You got more? Did we lose Mitchell? Mitchell? Dustin, I'm on the air. I'll call you when I'm off. For now, I'm off at 1. I'll call you as soon as I'm off. I sent you an email. Are we there? What happened? Did we lose the station? Mitchell, are you there? Let me just pick up on some other issues which deserve consideration too. along with those I've been addressing already, which have to do with the vaccine and coronavirus. But Mitchell, are you there? Are you there? Wow. I thought Paul was just doing a wonderful job. Very, 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 very thoughtful comments from Paul. And I get it about, you know, the car's going off the cliff and we're talking about the need for a brake job or whatever. I think that's very, very appropriate. We have unusual developments out in the Middle East. Iran is declaring that the nuclear deal talks should be done before the new president takes office. The president they're talking about is the Iranian president, Rouhani, who will be out of office in August. A spokesman for Rouhani said Tuesday there are no obstacles in the way to reaching a deal with the U.S. in the talks that are ongoing, that negotiators expect to finalize an agreement by August. Let me see. Wow. Let me call. Oh, I know what I'll do. That'll do it.
Hey, Jim, sorry, my power went out here at the house.
Oh, that's what happened?
That's what happened, yeah. We should be back. Some people are calling in, trying to get everybody back on the call.
Okay, thanks.
But we are on the air.
Okay, good. I thought Paul was making very good points. And, Paul, I greatly appreciate your thought about the car going off the cliff. Talking about needing a brake job. The fact is, yes, I'm talking about chronic problems, and you're, of course, discussing the acute, the immediate present hazards. I like what you were saying, Paul. Please do continue. Mitchell,
Paul's
do we
not,
have Bob?
Paul's not here yet. I'm trying to pull Bob. Oh. Bob's here.
Yep, I'm back on.
Oh, good, Bob. Oh, good. But there was a power outage at Mitchell's home, so we got knocked off the air. So we'll regain contact with Paul. We had Saul also on the line, and Mitchell himself wanted to add a few thoughts of his own.
I'm back now.
Okay, Paul, listen, I was appreciating what you were saying. And about the car going off the cliff and talking about needing new brakes. I was talking about chronic issues. You're talking about acute. Yes, we are facing imminent danger.
4280. Thank you.
Paul.
All right, so please record your message. When you have finished recording, simply hang up or press pound for further options.
By the way, it's a very interesting point you made, too, about the power and going off. And I actually wasn't a point, but what it reminds me of is there's an article right now on Winter Watch, Russ Winter, and he talks about the fact that they're letting us know now that they're planning these so-called games or simulations, such as simulating cyber attack and terrorist attack, and they're going to shut the power off in July. And in fact, a friend of the show and my friend Gary from Arkansas is telling me that he has a friend contact in government in Washington, D.C., and he's been informed that they are indeed going to do this, whether it's going to be for a few days, a week, or 2 weeks. He doesn't have that sort of specific information. But it just speaks to the larger issue of that we have enemies that are always trying to essentially hurt us, make us miserable, torment us. That's what this is all about, mock us. Bob, I would highly recommend, I don't know if you have a pen or a paper handy, but I was going to give you some things to look into to shall we say, freshen your perspective and kind of maybe bring you a little bit up to speed, because I think you there may be some things that you could round out your knowledge base. One of them is a book called America, What Went Wrong by Bartlett and Steele. Now, they actually, it was a series of articles in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I believe back in the 80s, by two reporters, Bartlett and Steele, and they turned it into a book entitled America, What Went Wrong. And I would highly, highly recommend this because when you look at, when you look and you see what was done, it had to be by deliberate plan and design. Just like you made a comment before about what happened to Detroit, for example. Well, what happened to Detroit, what happened to all of Michigan, what happened to the Rust Belt was a deliberate design to deconstruct and destroy the United States manufacturing base and to also destroy the income ability, income-making ability of the average American white male and therefore his ability to support a family and raise children. So this is all part and parcel of an agenda that our implacable Jewish enemies have had in mind for a very long time, and there's no voting our way out of this, unfortunately. And it speaks to another comment that you made early on that I wanted to jump on when you said that we have the greatest system in the world. No, I'm sorry, we don't. Okay, we have the exact perfect system for our Jewish masters to rule over us with their divide and conquer strategy. We have democracy, which is one of the worst systems I believe ever thought of, and the Greeks didn't think very well of it either. So one of the best systems that the world has ever seen is national socialism. That's why it had to be destroyed. And that's
you have reached the
here.
Maximum
what?
Time allowed to make your recording. To review, re-record, or add to your message, press 1. To mark your message urgent, press 2.
Sorry about that.
To mark your message private, press 3. To send your message as is, press pound.
Okay, so to finish, the problem that we have, of course, and I'm sure you know this, Bob, is globalism, okay? And that's why, for example, California is being destroyed. California is a target, and they're trying to do here what they want to do to the whole country. That's why now the white population of California is now, it's reported to be 49%. I don't know for sure, but I do know that when I was walking around here in the 70s, mostly everywhere I went, I saw white people. And I believe at the time in 1970, California was about 89% white. So this is part of the destructive nature of what these people want to do. There's really no way, in my opinion, forward.
I agree with
without.
I agree with it.
Yeah. Oh, go
that,
ahead.
That brings me to a thought. I've got a very good friend. We do a lot of building work in Idaho. And he took me to a place in Meridian, Idaho, and showed me rows and rows and rows of condos that are put up there. They're two-story, about 300 feet long housing. And it's all for people that don't work. It's different nationalities, exactly what you're talking about. And I asked my friend up there, John Huddleston's his name. I said, John, what's going on here? And he goes, this was during Barack Obama's era. He moved these people in here. They don't work. They get free housing. They get free everything. And he said, it's to dilute the Republican vote in the state of Idaho.
It's got nothing to do with it.
What I'm saying is I wonder how many more places in the country have similar situations.
They're doing it everywhere. And it's a racial war. That's all they care about. That's all these people don't give a damn about money because they already have all the money. They have the ability to create it out of nothing, make as much money as they want. The other thing I would recommend for you, Jim recently saw it himself, it's a movie called Idiocracy. Now, you can look at it from many different points of view, but, of course, the metaphorical is really something profound. Well, if Jim remembers properly, in the movie, there's a point where this corporation called Brondo, which in the movie, I believe, was a metaphor for Gatorade, but it's also a larger metaphor. Brondo just outright bought the government, okay? I don't know if you remember that part of the movie, Jim, where, you know, all of a sudden – this corporation, Brondo, decided, well, forget about trying to lobby and, you know, deal with all these regulatory agencies. We'll just buy the government. That is essentially what has happened. And if you want to really open your eyes, Bob, to what's going on here in California and elsewhere, I highly recommend a near three-hour documentary that you can see online called The Corporation Nation Master. And it talks about essentially the huge amounts of money that have been essentially pulled out and sequestered out of the economy. So the money is no longer serving a purpose. Money should serve a purpose. Right. And all that they're doing is essentially pulling money away, sequestering, and then, of course, using this money to make more money for themselves. And the scale is absolutely staggering. And again, I say this, the corporation nation master is, in my opinion, required viewing to understand the scope and the scale and the MO of these people. So in my opinion, and Jim's heard me say this for years, but I wish things were different. I'm sorry, I really do. But I don't think anything other than utter destruction is the remedy. In other words, I believe that the whole vaccine industry needs to be utterly destroyed. And if I had the power, I would do it. It would be smoldering ruins. Essentially, the whole medical establishment needs to be utterly destroyed. The whole judicial establishment needs to be utterly destroyed. Your comment about part-time legislatures back in the 60s or the 50s, that's all we've ever needed. Since when do we need full-time people passing law after law after law? How many more laws do we need? Have you been to the law library? Have you seen how many laws are on the books? Make a case for me that we need more laws. We have to get our heads right at the battle ahead.
There's not one judge in the States. There's not one judge in the United States that can repeat 10% of the laws that they have to rule on. It's ridiculous.
Correct.
I agree totally with you there. And but we have to start somewhere, and that's we have to start at a certain location and take it there. Will we end up in complete annihilation of a lot of these departments? I hope so. But it's going to take a long time. It's got to be something we dedicate ourselves to. But I do tend to say that we have a great bureaucracy. I mean, our system to me is actually really great. I disagree with you on that. But I think it's the most abused system in the world because we trust people.
Well, if it can't, let
me intervene that because of the power routing, we lost a couple of callers. I don't know if we still have Saul, Scaredy Cat. Anyone who would like to call back, remember the number 540-352-4452. Paul, I wanted to work Mitchell into the mix, and then we can come back to you. Mitchell, your thoughts about what Bob's had to say and Paul, too.
Well, I was speaking with somebody on the phone a little earlier, and they're mad as hell. And, you know, they're tired of being called a racist or white supremacist or, you know, saying that, you know, they're racist because of their skin color, and that Joe Biden is creating a race war by, you know, actually going out there and, you know, just saying, yeah, you white people, you're the problem. You all are white racists. And this is what you get from years of indoctrination with social injustice, because it's not about equality. It's about superiority today. So people are mad and they're angry because, you know, they're being told they're racist because of their skin color. And, you know, that's the first person to turn help anybody. All lives matter, not just black lives. But
they should be mad, Mitch. They should be mad.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
Yeah, I hate being, you know, you're being accused, you know, you're being accused of something that, number one, you weren't even born yet. You know, your parents weren't even born yet. And their parents, in most likely cases, some cases, weren't even born yet. And, you know, we have to understand that you can't hold individuals accountable for a race that they weren't even alive then to defend anything or do anything about it. It's absolutely absurd.
I totally agree, and these are important points, but let me just point out the obvious and what should be obvious by now. That's not really what these people care about. That's not part of the agenda. They're using that as a tool, a weapon in the bigger picture. The only reason they keep pounding on white supremacy and so forth is because what they fear is white racial unity. Okay, that's a problem to them. Yes, quote, white supremacy is a problem if it ever becomes, shall we say, something in the minds of whites. There's no doubt about the fact now that we are being made war upon, not just as a country, but as a racial group. There can't be any doubt about it. If anybody listens to this show and any other number of shows and they just have their eyes open, everything that is good for the white race, everything that would help our prosperity and help us to advance is forbidden to us. Okay, it's forbidden to us by our Jewish masters. I'm almost done. Meanwhile, they promote racial unity among the other groups. It's a recipe for our destruction. So we need to be more than mad. Sorry,
Jim. I want to bring in Saul from Colorado. Saul, join the conversation.
All right. Hi, gentlemen. By the way, I got to say, Paul, this is probably the best call I've ever heard you on ever in these past few months. You made some really good points, and I'm going to watch that documentary you brought up. Bob and Jim, I want to also thank you both for your service to this country. It's really great to know that there are great people here to stand up for our rights in America. What I wanted to bring up this morning is on June 8th, it'll be 54 years since the Israeli attack of the USS Liberty. And I'd like to hear what both of you gentlemen have to say about that and how Israel, the country, is a threat to the United States. And, I'll let you guys take it from there.
Well, let's have Bob begin. Bob, your thoughts.
When it comes to Israel right now, I'm not sure what's going on there. I know that it's in a transition, and anybody that's against the United States, I'm against them. I'll put that way really fast. But the bottom line is that before I make a statement, a bold statement about that, I want to learn a little bit more about it, because that's something that has been changing. I've been watching it on the news a little bit, but I've been researching it. And what I'm seeing in research is a little different than what I'm seeing on the news. So I don't want to make a statement and then have to, you know, backtrack it later. So I'm going to defer that to you, Jim.
Well, let's see. Mitchell, would you like to pick up on that? I mean, we know the role of Israel in controlling America is simply appalling. The dimensions are vast and sprawling. Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the way Paul sometimes puts these things, it can be highly provocative, but we know Cynthia McKinney revealed the pledge, you know, mm-hmm. about a decade ago that all new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of those of the United States, and where those who decline find themselves confronted with a well-financed alternative candidate, or even if there's been an intervening census or district may have been redrawn and they no longer had a seat. While Cynthia was able to prevail and serve some six terms in the House, even as notable a figure as Dennis Kucinich, whom I consider to be the smartest member of Congress at the time, was not. We know that Zionists control our media. I've reported this many, many times, of having a panel of 100 officials with CNN, every one of which is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, and 100 executives with NBC, every one of whom is a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, 100 executives of the New York Times, every one of which is a dual U.S.-American citizen. And I believe, you know, 9/11, as I've endlessly explained, was really an Israeli psyop to draw the United States into the Middle East, to use American military forces to take out the modern Arab state that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, and eventually to confront the Persian nation with Iran, whereas we all know it didn't happen because of opposition in Syria to ISIS, which United States itself had created, by both Russian and Iranian forces at the request of the democratically elected president of Syria. So I take a very dim view of Israel's role here. They went all in for Biden, all out against Trump. And I think actions now, such as the sinking of Iran's largest warship and a refinery near Tehran, which appear to have been operations conducted using directed energy weapons mounted on Israeli satellites, or, you know, indications of what is to come, not to mention, of course, the brutal treatment of the Palestinians in Gaza, utterly inhumane, where I think once again the Israelis overplayed their hand, because there's international outrage, not for the United States blocking resolutions out of the Security Council, there would have been United Nations condemnation of these actions, which have occurred many, many times, and where the U.S. again and again has protected Israel in the misguided belief that Israel is our friend. Israel, I believe, may be our greatest foreign enemy and adversary.
Hi.
Greater than China. Yeah,
Jim, it's not a misguided belief. Okay, we are occupied. I mean, the term Zog, Zionist occupied government, has been around since the 80s. It's not misguided belief. We are owned and occupied by our Jewish masters. And make no mistake, the things I may say, quote, may be provocative, but I'm trying to let you know what it is I see from, you know, some high ground, if you will. And they're going to let go a little bit. They're going to let up a little bit on this pandemic nonsense, but they're going to be pushing forward with this agenda over the next few years, over the next decade. These people
Paul,
are long-term
Paul, I
thinkers.
Paul, I agree. We do have another caller, Barb from Florida. Barb, join the conversation.
Hi, Dr. Fetcher and gentlemen. I just wanted to bring up, are you there?
We are indeed, Barb. We can hear you clearly.
Okay, thanks. When I was selling real estate a few years ago, one of the things that Obama was pushing was this affirmatively fair housing. And I think that's what he was referring to at the places out in Idaho, that any of these neighborhoods, they're going to, you know, nice residential neighborhoods and so forth. They're going to change them by pushing this affirmatively fair housing. Excuse me. I was opposing it with my friends in a committee that I was on with the realtors, and they didn't want to hear anything about it. They didn't understand how dangerous this policy is. You know, the fair housing is bad enough, but when you read affirmatively fair housing, that means special groups are going to get favoritism and they're going to be parked in these developments that may not, you know, be receptive. The other thing I just wanted to mention is there's an organization, because we have to educate people. That's one of the you know, most important things. I did used to be a teacher back in the 60s. And there's an organization called... Americans for Middle East Understanding, AMEU.org is their address, A-M as in Mary, EU.org. And in it is, Lest We Forget is one of their pamphlets they put out, The U.S.-Israeli Relationship, The Illusion of an Imaginary Common Interest. Excellent, a whole chronology. And I send these out, you know, to legislators or whomever I'm trying to educate. I just sent the other one that's very good, The Colonization of Palestine by Jamil Fayez, F-A-Y-E-Z-M-D. And it gives a little introduction. And then all through it, you have all of the villages that were destroyed by the Israelis. It really makes you sad. You know, how many of these villages where the people were just driven out and their houses destroyed, and they would plant trees there so that they wouldn't even know where their houses were when they came back to try to claim them. It's a, and then of course the other prominent book, which Pastor Chuck Baldwin is handling at his website right now, is Elim Pape, P-A-P-P-E, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Excellent, excellent book. How Ben-Gurion, yes, had all these, all, they had all the lists of all the shop owners, and at an appointed time, they were all put, you know, they were either shot or driven out, and their children and their families were driven out to become refugees, and they still are. I mean, and you know, you listen to Glenn Beck or O'Reilly. I was listening to them this morning. Oh, they're such Zionists. Why can't we get people to realize the truth about Israel?
Yeah. And
good
of course,
job, Barbara.
And of course, Barb, when you talked about Never Forget, you're talking about the attack on the USS Liberty in 1967 when the Israelis bombed and strafed and tried to take out an American spy ship. Where Lyndon Johnson,
yes,
even
there's a booklet like that too.
Yeah.
They made a booklet
good, Barb.
About too.
Good, Barb. Good, good. Right. We got another caller standing by, Scaredy
okay.
Cats. Yeah, Barb,
thanks
good
so
stuff.
Much. God bless.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Scaredy, join us.
Hi, Jim and Bob. And also hello to Mitch and Paul and Saul and Barb. So, I'm thinking of writing a book for Christians, perhaps. Dear Christians, it's time to listen to your little brother, maybe. That is, Muslims, Islam being a younger religion than Christianity, and of course, Christianity is big brother, haha, is the Jews' culture. And just a little bit playing with, you know, famous phrases and titles, just to emphasize that white people, Paul especially, it's not you just being targeted. This has gone on for centuries and maybe three millennia. Only maybe the last 500 years, maybe the last five centuries, the power of the Jews got tremendously accelerated and increased through the release of paper documents, that is gold being being stolen by them, and humanity got released paper money and paper stocks. And so gold, which you can't counterfeit, you know, it was more honest trading between different cultures. And just to make the point that the British Empire was raised by, you know, Jew money about 500 years ago, and it, at that time, later on, British became the superpower of the world, and to the extent that such a big empire never existed, the sun never set on the British Empire, was the famous saying. And now America took over when the British became poor, and American is now the modern superpower in decline. But the British themselves, they were just a little country, and at that time, the big superpowers were the Muslim empires. The Ottoman Empire in Western Asia and in South Asia, the subcontinent, the Mughal Empire. And just for white Christian fair-skinned people in Europe and her descendants, look at the past couple of centuries, how Muslim countries have been smashed. This is what's happening to you, especially. So it's not something special to you. It's the Jews taking and stealing. Whatever is happening to the Muslims that they refined on is now happening to the Christians. I'm using the word Christian as a generalized term to say whites.
Okay, so Scaredy, here's a question for you.
Hang on, Paul. Paul. I think Bob is reluctant to go there, but I'm glad to get Paul's thoughts about it. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was just going to ask Gary. So she's making some great points about history. We talk a lot about history on this show. History is fine, but, you know, it's nothing we can do about it. What lessons would you draw from history, Scaredy Cat, on all,
yeah,
everything that you know?
What
you're
I'm not talking about history. I agree with you, Paul. We don't have to look at excruciating detail about who did what to whom, but just enough to get a general idea of what happened to the past. This is happening in Iceland. Iceland's government just seized all of the nation's domain names, the .is. We think Iceland should really be IC, but Iceland, in their own language, they spell it IS. So the .is domain name just got totally seized by the Icelandic government. And this is published in the National Socialist, and for short, Nazi. Nazi, I think, as a perfectly neutral title, just like I would say Winston Churchill's administration, I would say the Nazi administration in a perfectly equal way, simply because they were the two opponents in the war, the two sides.
Scary, I apologize. I missed. What happened in Iceland?
They totally seized the .is domain ending, just like, you know, the .uk for England and the .ca for Canada. The .is got seized by the government. The government has taken over, and the way I know this, it's the Nazi party, which I really like, of Sweden. Sweden has a different domain name, .se, but they announced on their website the Nordic Resistant Movement.org, my best new website that I read. Everybody, that should become your favorite.
Nordic Resistance.org,
Nordic Resistance Movement.org. That is the very best people there. Are in Sweden. But they are talk to all the Nordic countries, such as Iceland and Denmark and Norway. Finland has done, so they are not joining. Finland are not able, I think, legally to join Finland yet. But these men are in Sweden, and they are excellent. They are the very best people on earth.
Scaredy, thank you. I'm glad we had the Paul and Saul and Barb all calling in. I want to go back to Bob. Bob, give us kind of a summing up here before we have to conclude our conversation today of what you think, everyone in the various states of the union ought to be doing to set things right.
Well, I think becoming more aware of their local government, their government, regardless of what state, and become more aware of what the federal government's doing. I'm looking more on the at the level of the state and the counties and the cities here in California, which limits me to a lot of the conversation that we're having on, as far as Israel and places. Not that versed in at this point in time. I have opinions, but at this point in time, I don't want to share this because I might have to retract some of my statements because I...
Sure. That's not a problem. That's not a problem.
But I think really we fix the problem in our local areas first, all the bigger problems, and then we can gradually conquer the elephant. I mean, you can't eat an elephant in one bite. You got to take it one bite at a time, and I think that's where we're at. That was my objective here today, was to talk about getting people involved locally in their own communities throughout the nation and get them what's going on. And, without communication, we have nothing. And we got to educate ourselves, communicate, and I think we can come to a resolve. That's what our forefathers did. We often talk about how brilliant they are or were, but we're living exactly what we're heading into as we speak. And so, we go back and we listen to what they have to say, what they have written down, and understand it. Because so many people, I could hand a person the copy of the Constitution, which I have on my desk all the time, and most people wouldn't even know what the First Amendment is, what the Second Amendment is, what anything. I mean, the people today have no idea what the Constitution of the United States of America is even about, and we have to educate the people again to that.
Bob, I think that's all wonderful. I want to commend everything you're doing. Tell me about the response you're receiving at the local and state level, especially.
An incredible amount of response. And again, it's from both sides of the aisle. We're getting a lot of people responding to our concerns and stuff. And we're getting a lot of different responses in as far as, well, this is an urgent thing now, and this is an urgent thing. We have probably 200 urgent things on our plate. We can't fix 200 at one time. Picking probably four of the most major things that we feel that the volume of people are saying, and then we're working on those four items. And as we complete one, we'll add one, and just let all these government agencies know that we are coming. Just we're coming one department at a time, and be aware we're gonna fix them, we're gonna repair them, we're not gonna rest till we do. And that'll go on long past my generation. It's going to be a build that we, the people, have a voice, and our voice is beyond the legislators. We are going to take back our title as a government again. That's
Bob, I can't thank you. I can't thank you enough for coming on, and thanks too to Barb and Paul and Saul and Scarity for calling in. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Jim, appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was...